Life is busy, especially if you've got a very important podcast to host. If you want fewer trips to the grocery store and a freezer full of meat, get ButcherBox. They've got incredible deals on high-quality meat and seafood, and it's delivered right to your door. You can customize your ButcherBox plan, and they'll throw in recipes, tips, guides, and hacks. ButcherBox meat is humanely raised. There are no antibiotics or added hormones, so you can choose from grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, crate-free pork, and wild-caught seafood, and shipping is 100% free. Sign up at butcherbox.com/underworld and use the code underworld to get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. That's butcherbox.com/underworld and the code underworld to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
Transform your home in one weekend with paint from Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save big money at Menards.
Hey guys, Sean here and welcome to the Underworld Podcast. Now, normally we put the following episode out as a bonus for our Patreon subscribers. Thanks, as always, to you guys, especially if you stuck with us and you helped keep the lights on over the past couple trying months. On that front, we'll actually be back with some big news and an actual real episode early next week, guys. Trust me when I say we've been itching to go for a long, long time. But given what's happened today, Danny and I wanted to put this show on the main feed. If you haven't already seen, last night the rapper Takeoff was shot dead at a bowling alley in Houston, Texas. Takeoff, real name Kersnick Carrie Ball, age 28, was one third of the trio Migos, an Atlanta group that's become one of the world's biggest rap outfits the past decade, and they've really helped keep the Georgia capital scene one of the hottest on earth. But Atlanta's rap scene has also been mired in gang violence and death, in a place, Atlanta, whose murder rate has gone through the roof in the past couple years. It's outstripping Chicago, which, as we know, is every politician's favourite bellwether of a failed city. And I just came back from Atlanta like 2 days ago, and while I was there, I headed to the east of the city to meet George Chidi, a crime reporter who's done a bunch of work on this stuff and who had some really interesting things to say about this whole cynical ecosystem of music, gangs and corruption in town. We'll definitely do a longer show about this further down the line because it's such a rich and complex subject and it definitely needs picking apart in fine detail. But for now, straight from a beer bar in Atlanta, like 3 days ago, I think, here's this week's episode. Hope you enjoy. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Underworld Podcast. I'm Sean Williams and I'm at a bar in Decatur, have I said that right? On the east side of Atlanta with George Chidi, a reporter writing as the Atlanta Objective, former Journal Constitution staffer and contributor to a whole bunch of other outlets as well. George is hopefully going to enlighten us on what's going down with Atlanta's music business. Young Thug's incarceration, I guess we'll talk about a bunch of other guys who are getting done on gang related charges and, well, mayhem. It seems like it's going on. So first, thanks for talking to me, George. I mean, let's start off with your own work. Like, tell us a bit more about yourself first off.
So my life is weird and has been for a long time. I bounced back and forth between being a journalist and being an activist, I guess, in Atlanta for going on 15 years. I spent a lot of time writing about and working on issues of homelessness and mental health and imprisonment. When the pandemic hit, I was in the street with everybody else looking at criminal justice issues. And while I was there, I noticed that the crime rate was starting to tick up in town in ways that were really disturbing. And because I've been a political writer for a long time, I realized it was going to have a political effect. Like when crime moves up, politicians stop. they stopped doing the reforms that everybody was in the street about. So I started writing very carefully about why crime was rising in Atlanta, looking very closely at the causes. One of those causes, it turns out, is that rappers behave badly in Atlanta. There's a gang problem in Atlanta, and the gang problem's connected to the music industry. And, you know, so one thing leads to another, and I'm ahead of everybody else on this arrest of Young Thug and the members of the YSL gang slash music label. Suddenly I'm a music journalist. Like, and I gotta tell you, like, if it's post Wu-Tang Clan, I need a map and a compass most of the time. But the last year has been a primer. Like, I'm starting to get it.
Who are your favorite artists coming out of the city at the moment?
Lil Nas X all day long. I've been a Killer Mike fan forever and ever and ever and ever. And in particular, Killer Mike is woke. And depending on who you're talking to around here, that could be pejorative or not. Mike is both authentic and cares about his community. And it shows. My rap interests are eclectic. You know, I like it personally. I like Future locally. But I'm also like, I'm in the odd Future set. Okay. All right. So, I mean, just like sort of geek rap. That's me.
In the last few years, like in the last 5 or so years, it's like really Atlanta has been the city for kind of the lean edge of American rap music. But it's had this kind of indelible link to the underworld here as well, right? And how did that all kind of kick off in the first place?
So it's interesting and a long story. First thing first, absolutely. Like, Atlanta is dominant right now in terms of who people around the country and the world are listening to for rap music. Maybe one out of four top 20 rap artists, like, on any given week is going to be an Atlanta musician. Future, Lil Baby, Young Thug before he went to jail. And I think that's likely to continue even after all of these arrests are taking place. But yeah, there's absolutely a link to the street culture and to street gangs, all of which are name-checked regularly in music that's being made here. I don't think the connection is incidental. I think the street gangs tend to use music as a way of attracting new gang members. If you're a 14-year-old and you want to get into the music industry, it's really easy for one of these groups that's linked to a music, people are going to yell at me when I say this, but Lil Baby name checks 4PF regularly. That's a street gang called Four Pockets Full. Four Pockets Full has legal problems, frankly, and some of their people are in jail. But it's easy if you're a Four Pockets Full guy to say, look, come join our gang. Maybe you'll meet Lil Baby and maybe we could get you some studio time. That was certainly the case with YSL. Like, some of their guys would go to jail, they'd come out and they'd immediately go into the studio. They would immediately go into the studio. They would be picked up outside of the jail and driven to a studio to start rapping.
So this is a label like YSL that it's not just playing off the kind of street rep of its artists, right? It's like it's a kind of like feedback loop where it's deliberately saying we are gangsters, this is what we do, we're criminals. If you do crime, you can actually come join us. I mean, where does the record label end and the gang begin?
The amazing thing is that, like, it's this Schrodinger's cat kind of thing. It's a Rorschach test. Like, they want to be a gang when it is advantageous to them. Like, when they're on the street and they're trying to recruit gang members. And they want to be a record label when they're in court and being accused of being, you know, an illegal criminal street gang. I think they deliberately cultivate ambiguity about that. the like YSL, for example, like Young Thug sponsors a Pop Warner football team called like the Cleveland Avenue 49ers, like showing how he's giving back to the community while ignoring what may potentially be 50 murders that have taken place in this gang war between YSL and YFN. YSL predates the music, like, and there's a direct lineage you can draw between Young Slime Life, the street gang, and earlier incarnations of street gangs on Cleveland Avenue in Atlanta, like the Raised on Cleveland, which gets name checked in his music, like Raised on Cleveland, where you replace the C with a B because you're Bloods, which itself was an outgrowth of 30 Deep, which was a street gang that tended to do a lot of like robberies of high-end fashion, where they knock over the place, steal a bunch of like $100 blue jeans, and then sell them out of somebody's house for $20. The media called them the Blue Jean Bandits at one point. And members of YSL today were arrested, charged, and convicted for crimes like 10 and 15 years ago with 30 Deep. 30 Deep, also something Young Thug name checks in his music. It's, you know, they want to claim this lineage because it creates street authenticity. And that authenticity sells records. But they also don't want to say that they're a street gang when they're in jail and facing a charge of being a member of a violent criminal street gang.
And some of the city governance here has been talking about RICOing these guys, right? I mean, is that happening at the moment?
So YSL is one of several street gangs that are facing a state-level racketeering charge. YSL has a racketeering charge. YFN, which was their main rival in Atlanta, is also facing a racketeering charge. There's a group called Drug Rich, which is actually out of DeKalb, but they were robbing houses, including Mariah Carey's house in North Fulton. And so they're facing a racketeering charge. And the district attorney, Funny Willis is aggressively using the racketeering statute in order to prosecute local gangs in ways that we haven't seen before in 20 years.
And, I mean, you've written a lot about kind of the cops here as well, use of force is kind of the policing around Metro Atlanta is questionable, is it fair to say? I mean, what's the relationship like with the city and the cops and everything going on like that as well?
It's a fascinating question. So people were in the street 2 years ago over police brutality, and they burned down, and I watched them do it, they burned down a Wendy's where police officers killed a guy at a traffic stop. Those police officers were exonerated a couple of months ago. There have been 6 fatal police shootings in Atlanta this year, which is 3 times the normal number. But there hasn't been some massive outcry by the public, in part because violent crime is up and people are far more concerned about violent crime than police brutality issues, or so it would seem. Honestly, I think that the media is falling down here. We should be presenting all of this stuff in exactly the same way, like with exactly the same amount of urgency, and we're not. That's part of the reason I do the work that I do.
And the murder rate here now has topped Chicago, and we're getting to Central America levels, I think, where I've seen it. It's like, I mean, it's getting pretty bad.
So we are higher than Chicago. Like the murder rate, and like I want to make sure, because people like numbers, it gets weird. There have been roughly 160 murders over the last 12 months, sort of 12 months running. And there were 160 or so murders the previous year. But there were only 100 murders the year before that. Like, the violent crime in Atlanta exploded during the pandemic, and it has not receded yet. like, the irony is that violent crime in Chicago, like, it increased, but not nearly by the same percentage amount, even though they'll probably have 800 or 900 murders this year. They're also six times as large as Atlanta. The city of Atlanta is only about 500,000 people, so that's what we're looking at. But we're talking about a murder rate, like, that's 40 per 100,000, when the national rate is more like 6.5 per 100,000. Like, it's a serious problem. It's a real problem. It is, like, it's still not as bad as it has been historically. Like, let me hasten to say, the murder rate in America and in Atlanta peaked in the early 90s. Like, we're still safer today than we were back then. But there's been this massive change. And people react to that with panic. And I wish people wouldn't panic, because it gets more people killed. Like, I am anti-panic.
That's a good thing to be. I mean,
let's face it, money is the one subject we all need to deal with, but no one actually wants to talk about. The good news is there's a podcast helping you learn everything about money no one taught you. Meet Everyone's Talkin' Money, hosted by me, Shauna Game. Everyone's Talkin' Money focuses on relevant, inclusive, and forward-thinking conversations around money and just helps you get in a better relationship with your money no matter what your goals are. Do yourself a favor and subscribe to Everyone's Talkin' Money podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
In terms of this, like, the gangs and the music and how these are interlocking at the moment, I mean, there was even a case this week, right? There's a guy being sent down for murder. He's YSL, right? So this stuff is very alive.
Like, so he is, and I don't understand what he was doing on the stand. Jaden Myrick is one of the two dozen people who are accused in this wide-ranging RICO and gang case that is also with Young Thug and Gunna. But he was also charged with a murder in 2018 of killing some people at a country club, like, as in a robbery. And he took the stand a couple of days ago and said, yeah, I was with YSL and, like, you know, I'm a blood and, like, you know, I was jumped in at some point. But it took a while because I was too young when I first joined. And, oh, by the way, I rep 4PF now, and I've talked to Lil Baby since I've been in jail. Like, and he's saying all this stuff on the stand. And I'm looking at this like, you still have another trial coming up on the gang stuff. Now, yes, you just got convicted. You've been sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. You're never coming out. Why? I don't legitimately don't understand what he thought he was going to gain by testifying. But it speaks to the brazenness of a lot of this. They're like, at the end of the day, somebody wants to stand up like it's Game of Thrones, and you want to call somebody a bastard before you get your head cut off and just say it out loud. There we are.
And like, what's the deal with drill here as well? Drill is kind of getting more popular. I mean, that's my touch point with this, because drill in London has been such a kind of, like, media black beast, in that, like, you got the right wing saying this is like the worst thing in the world. These guys are, there's like veiled racism going on there for sure. And on the other side, you're like, well, he did rap that he killed this guy with a knife at this time on this street. And he pretty much fucking did do that. So it's like, so what, drill is getting big here as well, right, in Atlanta?
Yeah, so pandemic. Here's a little history. Like, pandemic hits, everybody shuts down, and then Atlanta opens back up again because our governor, Brian Kemp, is a moron. But also because he's pro-business and all the rest of this, so our clubs reopened when everybody else's clubs were closed. And suddenly we started to have this influx of people coming in from out of town to party here, some of whom were from Chicago. Like, the working theory is that Chicago began to influence rap. Now, there was a drill element to Atlanta rap that had started to emerge before this. How could there not be? Like, the music is universal. Everybody's listening to it everywhere. You could assume it's going to be influential here. But it really started to infect the music here. Trap is very different from drill. Trap is about guys who are poor trying to get paid, like running drugs and women and clubs. Trap is different from drill, which is about ops and getting shot and shooting people. And that was not Atlanta rap culture before. It is starting to be Atlanta rap culture now. And there's one artist in particular who's called Baby Drill, who is going to go on trial for murder. He is accused of leaving a strip club in Atlanta a few months ago, getting in the back seat of an SUV, and blowing the head off of the guy in the front seat of that SUV. There was a music executive from one of the labels who testified at his bond hearing. I mean, because that's where things are right now. It's not like this connection between the violence and the music industry is not incidental. Not when industry reps are showing up in court and paying people's legal fees. And it's got to stop. Like, I don't, like, I'm not going to be some, like, conservative, you know, like, all rap is evil and you need to stop this stuff and whatnot. But, like, the community needs to come together and say, look, this is not of us. Like, this is, Atlanta influences everything. Like, so we have some social responsibility to not spread that influence any farther than it needs to go.
And midterms just around the corner as well. How is this becoming a big part of the narrative for the midterms?
Crime is a big deal in the midterms. Conservatives have been pushing crime, and they've been trying to link Democratic politicians to the defund the police thing, which is untrue. Which is not that the truth matters in politics these days, but there's no mainstream Democratic politician who's ever been calling for police defunding. They added to the police budget in Atlanta, significantly, I might add, honestly, in ways that I find disturbing. It's like we're just right at the edge of Willie Horton ads, where they're going to start putting the pictures of maybe rappers who've shot people up and saying, hey, if you want this guy to shoot someone else, vote for a Democrat. Like, that's the tenor of Georgia politics right now. There isn't really a lot of issue advertising going on. It's all visceral, personal fear-mongering, and it's exactly what I was afraid of.
Is any of the gang stuff and any of this, like, blood-influenced gang crime, I mean, are you seeing it on the street? Like, what's, like, from day to day, is Atlanta a particularly dangerous place to be walking about?
Absolutely not. So that's the other thing. Like, you really have to be looking for trouble in order to be the victim of violence. Like, when somebody who isn't is a victim of violence, it is both rare and extraordinary and newsworthy. But, I mean, Atlanta... if you're a white guy in Atlanta, I'm just going to say this. If you're a white guy in Atlanta, your odds of being killed here are actually lower than they would be in Boise. Last year, the city went 6 months before its first white murder victim. There were 158 people who were killed in Atlanta last year, and 142 of them were black. Like, and it's because Atlanta's poverty is racially identifiable in ways that is not so much in other parts of the world. The average income for a white household in Atlanta is over $80,000 a year. For a black household, it's around $30,000 a year. It's the largest gap in the United States. And the violence follows the poverty. It is the inequality that drives the violence. It's why things increased as much as they did in Atlanta. It's because Atlanta had more inequality than basically any other city in the United States. Like, and that's the thing. If you're not staring at a problem that can't be solved except with money, like, you're not, if you and I have a problem, bearing in mind I'm African American, but I've got a little money, like, if I have a problem, I will write a check. I'll hire a lawyer. Like, I'll call a cab. Like, I can fix it. Like, if you're poor and you're black, violence looks like an option because you don't have other options, and that's why it happens.
I guess there's not so many white rappers coming out of Atlanta rapping about slinging drugs to make a living.
I can't think of one. There are none. The short answer is there are none, because there are literally not enough poor white people in Atlanta. The poverty rate for black people in Atlanta is around 30%. The poverty rate for white people in Atlanta is around 6%.
Yeah, that kind of speaks for itself. what do you think, being a local reporter, what do you think people are missing about the music and the gangs here? Like, on the countrywide narrative, or even outside of the country, like, do you think there's a lot of stuff going over people's heads, or are they deliberately mischaracterizing the whole thing?
I think, like, to start, I think they make light of the real casualties here. Like, there's a cynicism. If you're listening to, like, trap or gangster rap, drill, whatever we want to call it, if you're listening to music where they're talking about people dying on the street, it's not, they're talking about actual people who are dying on the street. Like, and I can name names. This isn't arbitrary. Like, their lives are changed, communities are changed. And I think people don't understand their personal culpability in this. If you're putting money in the pockets of people who are profiting from the death of poor black people, you have to ask yourself whether or not you bear some social responsibility for that. Because they're, like, the whole purpose of this music is to get paid. Like, and you're the one who's paying them. Like, I'm not saying don't listen to rap music. Please listen to rap music. Please listen to Atlanta rap music. But understand that, like, when we're talking about real street gangs like YSL or YFN or Four Pockets Full or 4PF or Play for Keeps, that's PFK, or Homicide or The Henchmen or 5L or 4L or any of these guys, like, there's, when they're talking about, like, the bodies that they've dropped, there are human beings who are dead. And if you're listening to this music and you don't care about that, like, there's a moral judgment to be made. Like, that's one.
And are there any, like, big moments coming up in the near future then? Like, any trials, any cases that are going to kind of further define this whole thing?
Several. Like, the big one, of course, is YSL. Now, on paper, it's supposed to start in January. There's no way it starts in January. It's probably going to be pushed to late March or maybe later. The YFN case with YFN Lucci and the other YFN gang members is also going to hit sometime in the middle of next year. The Baby Drill case, I think, is important. There are some smaller cases, like, for people that you probably have never heard of before, like Glock 40 Spaz. That's a real game. That's a, you guys, yeah. Baby Drill has got a record label, but most people haven't heard of it. What I'm waiting for, other music groups / street gangs to get rounded up in big RICO cases. And like the district attorney's got her eye on like a half a dozen street gangs, most of which are tied to one rapper or another. I don't think it changes rap in the sense that I think Atlanta is going to be a rap metropole basically forever. There's just too much infrastructure, too many people paying attention, too much love for this city. And I love this city. And the rappers who are rapping here love this city, I think. This is like, but this gang culture is a product of the inequality and poverty that are endemic in this city. Like, that is real. They are rapping about things that are real. And I don't think that changes until the reality of that actually changes, where a black person with a clean criminal record is as likely to be called into a job interview as a white person with a recent felony conviction. That is a measured statistic. Like,
the information that I am providing today is coming from higher dimensional consciousness.
Things got so weird during 2020, and it wasn't just the QAnon conspiracy theorists. This New Age channel told us
Donald Trump is a massive and powerful lightworker.
A lightworker? And then what about this Oprah-endorsed, best-selling feminist health icon talking about heavy metals
that are in vaccines that make our bodies literally into an antenna with 5G?
As we continued studying what we now call conspirituality, it only got more intense.
This is the cult of Baphomet. This is Molochite worshipping stuff. It gets very gory in the basement.
And it culminated with that shaman dude showing up at the Capitol insurrection. But it didn't stop there. Every week on Conspirituality Podcast, we track the overlaps between New Age spirituality and far-right conspiracy cults.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, One Strange Thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real and just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
As long as the sort of like real racism that black people in Atlanta endure continues the way it does, you're going to see rap music made the way it is. And I really wish people would focus more on fixing those problems.
Yeah, that's what we like to try and dig into on the show as well. So, thanks for joining us, obviously. And where can we kind of find your work?
So look for me first on Substack at theatlantaobjective.substack.com. I also write semi-regularly for Rolling Stone and the investigative journal The Intercept, also Atlanta Magazine, and also Decaturish, like when I'm feeling political.
Nice. Well, George, thanks ever so much. And I think it's definitely a topic that we're going to keep an eye on as well, because definitely in Danny's wheelhouse. It's really fascinating, and it sounds like there's tons more to come out in the near future. Cheers.
Thanks.